Hello, Star Trek fans, and welcome to the Rebinge Deep Space Nine podcast. My name is Kim.
And my name is James.
And we're watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine from the beginning, one episode at a time. Welcome back to the podcast. Today we are on Season 2, Episode 19, entitled Blood Oath. This episode aired March 27th, 1994. Before we start talking about this one, anything to say about last week's podcast?
No, it was perfect.
Well, it was Profit and Loss. That was the one with the, the tie-in to Who Shot JR. Yep.
And I think also on a personal level, that was probably the most interrupted podcast we have ever made. Apparently, there must have been an air show going on.
Yeah, between the helicopters, the airplanes, the cats.
Yeah. It was, That was a struggle to actually record.
It was like a two-hour recording and a 20-minute podcast. Let's hope for better today. We're recording at a different time of day, hoping that it will be quiet.
Yes.
I've not heard a single airplane today, so of course they'll probably start now.
Or leaf blowers.
Well, the leaf blowers could happen anytime in California.
Yeah, the sound of California.
Okay, should we get started?
Absolutely.
In the cold open, Quark has elicited Odo's help to get a Klingon out of one of the holosuites. The guy's been in there for 3 hours fighting the Battle of Klok-Dekel Brakt, a legendary Klingon victory over the Romulans 100 years ago.
The Klingons do love their battles.
Yes, they do. Especially when they win.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. If they lose, then they were betrayed.
Yeah. That sounds familiar. Quark said he threatened to shut off the power to the holosuite to get the guy out, but then he said he'd kill him. Odo says, aw, which really irritates Quark. When they get to the door, Odo tells him to shut off the power, and Quark says, but he'll kill you. No. Odo says, he'll kill you, which he finds quite funny.
Yes.
Quark shuts off the power, and an old snarling Klingon with huge frizzy gray hair pushes his way out of the door. He's slurring his words and roaring, clearly very drunk. He tries to reach for Quark, but Odo grabs his arm and says, the battle is over, and people are waiting to celebrate your victory. The guy says, they are? Lead the way. So Odo leads him out, but ultimately, he just dumps him in a cell to sleep it off.
Yes. I was very impressed with how Odo knew exactly how to handle this. It didn't result in any violence. He just knew how to get this Klingon to the holding cells.
Yeah, Odo showed a lot of care with how to deal with the Klingons in this episode.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure he's not very happy about getting stuck on drunk patrol, though. It probably happens a lot with Quark's bar.
That does seem to annoy him when he's dragging the drunks into the holding cell.
He hates to do domestics.
Or waking up Morn when he's sleeping on the promenade.
Oh, yes.
Now we're in Odo's office, and we meet another old Klingon with gray hair. This is Koloth, and he's asking about the charges against the Klingon in the cell. Odo says, no charges. He's today's guest of honor. Koloth says, you must be a very brave man to attempt humor at the expense of a Klingon Dahar master. Odo apologizes, saying no offense was intended, and he takes Koloth in to see the drunk, whose name is Kor. But Koloth is very upset that Kor has disgraced himself and their purpose on the station by being a drunk. And he sort of spits, keep him, to Odo, and he leaves. And then the drunk just falls back to sleep.
Oh, yeah. Koloth delivers a serious admonishing of the drunken Klingon.
Yeah, and Odo, meanwhile, just rolls his eyes, and we cue the theme song.
Yeah, he does that huff.
Yes. So let's talk about the actors playing Kor and Koloth.
Yes.
Both of these actors actually played these characters on the original series almost 30 years ago at this point.
Which I think is pretty awesome.
Kor is played by John Colicos, who was in many, many other things also, including the original Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, he played a bad guy.
I don't remember that. I'm not sure I really watched much of the original. Maybe. I don't know. I have foggy memories. Unfortunately, this was one of his last roles, though, this episode of Blood Oath. Koloth is played by William Campbell. This guy was also in a number of other things, with this, again, being one of his last roles.
Yeah.
Odo heads to Ops, where he tells Kira it's been a Klingon afternoon. He says there's a drunk Klingon in his holding cell who must be 100 years old, and even his friend, who must be 150 years old, wants nothing to do with him. Kira finds this all very amusing. Dax is very interested in the story when she hears the name of the drunk dude. She wonders what he's doing there and asks Odo to take her to the guy right away. So down in the cells, Dax asks the old guy if he remembers Curzon Dax. The guy says it's his old friend, and he lifts his gaptu to Curzon, whatever that means. Jadzia gives him the news that she is Dax, and although he is a little skeptical at first, he eventually gets on board, saying it's been 81 years since he's seen his old friend.
It makes sense that Curzon, the old drunk, would be friendly with another old drunk.
That's true.
Yeah, they're probably all drunks together.
Yeah. He gives her a big hug and he seems very accepting, saying, "Jadzia, my beloved old friend." She says, "Come on, Kor, let's go find Koloth." And he says, "Koloth is here?" Which is funny because he just saw him a minute ago.
He was a little plastered when Koloth turned up.
And Odo rolls his eyes again. There's a lot of scoffing and eye rolling by Odo.
Yeah. I mean, he's shaking his head. I think at the end of the day, Odo just wants a quiet life. He wants things to run smoothly. He doesn't want any interruptions and probably does not want Klingons breaking anything, which I expect they do a lot.
Yeah, he has a particular distaste for Klingons. I'm not sure why. I think it's maybe because they cause a lot of chaos.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know there's probably a huge breakages bill after every Klingon visit.
Yeah. We go to the Replimat where Koloth is using his extreme Klingon blade to cut some cake. Kor finds this very funny and mocks him for it. When he gets a look at Jadzia, he says, "The Federation insults us by sending a lieutenant to greet us." But she tells him he was the toughest negotiator she ever faced across the negotiating table. He looks confused, so Kor tells him it's their old friend Dax. He's baffled by this development, saying Kang must not have known. And then the third dude, another old Klingon named Kang, appears from behind, saying he has found the albino, and we get dramatic music, like that's supposed to mean something.
So they were looking for Voke?
They're a little early.
Yeah.
No. They're a little late. Oh my god, the timelines are so confusing. Now we are in Jadzia's quarters, I think. Or somebody's quarters, and she's trying to convince Kang that she was godfather of his son, but Koloth says, "You're no one's godfather." I thought that was cute. Kang asks if she's the same Dax that took a blood oath with them to seek vengeance. She says, "Don't mistake a new face for a new soul. I still feel at one with your family, and I hope you'll embrace me as a brother," which they all find funny again.
I'm betting that Curzon just got drunk with these Klingons, and they made a blood oath. And I bet they went and got tattoos as well.
Probably.
Matching ones.
Kang tells a story about how 7 years ago, he met one of the albino's discarded wives. He fed and clothed her, but she was too afraid to give him any info. But 3 months ago, she died, and he received an amulet of hers that held the location of the albino sanctuary. He says he's confirmed that he's still there.
And he said he got the information from traders, and they will never warn anyone ever again. This does seem very Klingon to me. To ensure operational security, he killed everybody who had any information.
Yeah. He also says the albino only has 40 men in his compound. And he says, "This time we'll reach the albino. And when we do, I'll cut his heart out and eat it while he watches me with his dying breath." And the Klingons all nod in agreement while Dax looks a bit torn.
This is just a normal Klingon thing.
It's just a normal conversation.
Yeah.
That guy Kang, another one who played Kang in the original series, is played by Michael Ansara. He has such a distinct melodic voice. He was in all kinds of things, including a lot of voice acting appearances, which is not surprising with that voice. But also he was on Babylon 5, Chips, Fantasy Island, Buck Rogers, Kojak, Mission Impossible. The guy was like all over the TV in the 70s.
Oh, that's funny. It's a really nice touch. They brought all these actors back who played Klingons in the original series to do this episode. It's a nice nod to the original series and the heritage that this came from.
Yeah, and it's interesting. It's about 115 years later, according to the star dates, the useless star dates. So these characters are indeed very old. Yeah. And, you know, the actors are pretty old, too.
I will also say that Koloth's outfit is impeccable. I mean, the other two have got pretty decent costumes, but Koloth's one is fabulous.
What was different about it?
Well, the way he had the sash that went across and sort of the just the style of it. And it also looked very clean. The other two look a little bit faded, as it were. Kor looks like he's a mess, but Koloth looked like he very much kept himself in perfect shape.
Well, I think Kor being a mess was a specific choice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think also you were supposed to see them as a bit faded, right?
Yeah.
So it would make sense that their costumes were faded and that Koloth was maybe still a little bit regal and clinging to the old ways.
Yeah, yeah. And I like Jadzia's comment earlier in the scene where she said, "Don't mistake a new face for a new soul."
Right.
I feel that would be a very Trill kind of thing to say, like a Trill truism.
Yes, except they always make these points of the old life ends, the new one begins, and they leave everything behind. So I don't know. There's some mixed messages here, I think, about Trills.
I do comment on that.
Later?
Yeah.
So I should keep going?
Yes.
Kang and Jadzia are walking on the promenade. He says he had no idea that Curzon had died, and he didn't want to risk a subspace message to him for fear the albino would intercept it. Here we learn that Curzon had opened the door to peace between the Klingons and the Federation. He was the first diplomat that Kang had ever met that understood the nature of Klingons. He says he knows that each new Trill host has no obligation to pass commitments, but she knows that a Klingon blood oath can never be broken.
We learn in this part of the conversation that Curzon was actually a very skilled diplomat and seems to have been very effective. So I find it funny. So we've had this sort of image built up of Curzon, and I look at him as sort of this boorish, drunken gambler and reprobate. But I wonder if the real character was he was really, really skilled at his job, but an absolute complete ass. We've both met people who are like that, who really exceptionally good, but are just terrible people with no ability to sort of interact on a normal level. And I wonder if that's sort of the implication with Curzon.
Maybe. He has to be good at something.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it makes no sense.
Well, it's almost that thing of somebody's really skilled at something, but everything else, if you like, everything else in their life is sort of, they're useless at or not very good at.
It would also make sense that he identified with the Klingons a bit. The way he's been described to us certainly fits with what these three guys are like.
Yes.
Kang laments the fading away of the old Klingon ways. He says, now our warriors are opening restaurants. I wonder if that's a reference to the guy running the Klingon Panda Express on the promenade. He's not in this episode, but...
Yeah, and I wouldn't ask him what he feels about accordion playing and singing either.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, I don't know. I think they like the singing.
Oh, yeah, they like singing, but yeah, they probably only like the really dirgeful Klingon opera. That would be my guess. They probably consider what that guy sings as sort of new wavy. It's too modern for them.
Yeah, poppy.
Yeah, but this is a classic sort of kids today, they're such snowflakes type of conversation.
Yeah.
I believe Dax's response to him should have been, lol, boomer.
Boomer. That would have been funny.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, he says he releases her from her obligation to Curzon's blood oath. You owe nothing to us. And she looks really disappointed.
Yeah.
Now we go to Ops, and Dax very awkwardly asks Kira how many people she killed when she was in the underground.
Oh my God, that look.
From Kira?
Yeah.
Yeah, she does not like that question. She's been asked it a couple of times, and actually, she doesn't answer it again. She just says too many.
She looked just horrified.
Well, I do think when she's on duty here, she tries to put that aside and be the person who's on duty and represent her role. And when people remind her of her past, I think she finds that very uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think she should deflect at this point and just say that, well, I don't consider Cardassians people, so they don't count. And collaborators deserved what they got, so effectively none.
Uh-huh. Kira then pulls her aside and asks for the details of why she's asking. And so she explains that 80 years ago, there was a band of depredators. That's a word I've never heard.
Klingon for pirates, perhaps?
Led by an albino raiding Klingon colonies. Three Klingon warships were sent to stop him, and they did, but the albino escaped. And in his last message to the Klingons, he promised to take revenge on the firstborn of each of the three captains. And a few years later, he did just that when he infected the three children with a genetic virus that killed them. One of them was Curzon's godson, who was actually named Dax after him. I took a blood oath to avenge his death, she says. But that was Curzon's godson, Kira says, and Curzon took the blood oath, not you, Jadzia. Kira reminds her that she said herself that each new life for a Trill is a clean slate. Otherwise, they'd be paying off old debts forever. And Dax says she just feels an obligation, even though the Klingons have released her from the oath.
Yeah.
So Kira feels at this point like she needs to give her some advice. And she says, when you take someone's life, you lose a part of your own as well.
This was a very good scene. I liked earlier when Kira realizes something's going on and just grabs Dax and says to her, tell me. That was great. I thought that Kira realizing that Dax potentially was going to do something that she would regret.
Yeah, it was better than that bickering we got from them a few episodes ago. This was much more like, I think, how two people would react in this situation.
This scene is a reminder of why I really like the show. Kira is the one who really understands what Jadzia is potentially getting herself into. And Jadzia's sense of loyalty, it must have been an event that was so traumatic to Curzon that it carried through and still resonates with Dax's current host.
Yeah.
So if you like, Jadzia still feels that, which is Again, another piece of interesting backstory to Trills.
Yeah, I'm still not sure the way they're doing the Trill stuff is consistent.
Oh, no.
Because quite often, it just seems like the Trill is a memory card.
Yeah.
And then other times, it seems to bring emotions with.
Right.
Like in the episode Dax, and then here again in this episode, where she's actually feeling something from the past.
Yeah.
I guess maybe that memory stick also has a couple of emotions on there, but clearly not all of them, or these people would go crazy
right.
If you had seven lifetimes of emotions. That would be pretty tough.
Oh, agreed. Agreed.
If not impossible.
Well, especially if all of the events could come flooding back or could become part of it, part of your everyday.
Right. Now we go to Quark's, and Kor is hanging out with some Dabo women and drinking some more because that's what he needs to do.
No wonder Curzon liked him.
Yeah. When Dax comes in, she asks the women to leave, and Kor says, well, you certainly don't share Curzon's priorities, which I think we've established many, many times.
Yep.
She wants to go after the albino with them, but Kang and Koloth don't want her. Dax wants him to help convince the others that she should come along, but he thinks that's probably pointless.
I like how Kor says, the splendor of fighting and killing, a bloodbath in the cause of vengeance. Who wouldn't want to come?
Yeah, that's very cute. He's like an animated, cartoony kind of version of a Klingon, this guy.
Oh, he really is. I love how the Klingons just have this wonderfully uncomplicated view of the world. And I guess as these are also older Klingons, they're much more into the older ways and the old method of the Empire, as it were. So they're very uncomplicated.
Yeah, very black and white.
You know, all three of them, I guess because of the age thing, I get very much the Christopher Plummer vibe from Undiscovered Country, where he played Chang.
Yeah, they seem like they would be contemporaries.
Yeah, and Chang, Plummer brought that character to life just so well.
Yeah. Now we go to Koloth waving around his Batleth in a holosuite. These guys are definitely old and not terribly practiced. A few times it looked like he was going to fall over.
And I don't know whether that was deliberate acting or whether that
was sure.
Just these were older actors at this point. So it was probably quite a lot of effort to do that.
Jadzia wanders in and Koloth tries to get rid of her, saying she can't come along. So she tells the computer to give her a Batleth, and then we have a battle of stunt doubles, which ends with him knocking her over.
Yes, that is one of the things that you do see with higher def, and probably didn't come out in the original series, the shape of the person who was doing the fight with Koloth. When you see it from the back, they are not as tall as Dax, and they are not the right shape.
Yeah, it was funny how much shorter she got all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Well, he's impressed with her skill and says, your presence against the albino will do honor to our cause. So she's won one of them over.
Yeah.
Kor and Kang entered just before this, but Kang doesn't care about what he saw. He says, you will not be part of our quest. And he stomps out like a big baby.
I get such a feeling of glory days of the old guys trying to recapture some glory of the past.
Yeah, I think with Klingons, you're supposed to believe that they don't necessarily want to live to be old. They want to die in battle and gloriously and however they define that.
Have songs sung about them.
It's like there's no honor in age.
Yeah. Yeah, right. And Kang said he doesn't want any girls in the boys' camp.
Something like that. In Quark's, Kor and Koloth leave Kang and Jadzia alone. Kang just doesn't want to talk about this at all, but she reminds him of some memories between Curzon and him and how the bond was built. She says, he can't not let her avenge her godson's death. You can't ask me to live with that kind of dishonor. But he can't dishonor himself by allowing her to die in Curzon's place. She says she has no intention of dying. By placing your honor above mine, you dishonor yourself. Fine, he says. Come and fight with us. Come and be damned. He stomps off.
Yeah. He also says in that scene, you try to speak like a Klingon, but the words do not fit in your mouth. There are some great Klingon lines in this episode.
And absolutely.
I personally feel that the Klingon language would just be littered with proverbs, adages, and sayings, just in normal conversation.
Yeah.
That's sort of what I picture it. If you translated it all into English, it would be full of things like that.
Right.
You dishonor the memories of your forefathers. I just didn't put the trash out.
Yeah. There'd probably be a lot of that with simple things.
Yeah. She clearly understands the Klingons. Based on this interaction, she makes a direct appeal to his code of honor. And I feel she manipulates him to an extent because she understands them. And that, I think, is probably one of the more interesting things in this. If it shows Dax's understanding of the Klingons, perhaps more than anybody else.
Well, she has said that a few times leading up to this episode, that she has an understanding and interest in Klingon culture.
Yeah.
In Dax's quarters, she's packing when Sisko comes stomping in. He is not happy.
Oh, that is not a happy Sisko.
No, and he says he denies her leave of absence. He points out that Jadzia also took an oath to Starfleet. She says, don't make me disobey a direct order. He doesn't understand this at all. Whatever else Curzon was, he had a fundamental morality. He wouldn't condone murder, but yet he swore to kill the albino. I don't know about this fundamental morality that he had. It was obviously a very specific set of morals.
Yeah.
He reminds her that the Federation has laws against this kind of thing, and she says the Klingons have their own set of laws, and this is justice to them.
I've chosen to respect their codes of honor.
Yep. He asks if she really thinks she's capable of doing this, but she doesn't know, and she says there's only one way to find out.
Oh.
He also asks if she thinks she can just come back and resume her duties as if nothing happened. She says, that will be up to you, and she leaves. Ad break. Drama.
Sisko is just not happy about any of this.
He is not. It's so dramatic, and he's just like, ugh, after she leaves.
I think this kind of shows that Sisko maybe really didn't know Curzon as well as he thought.
Yeah, because he didn't even know about the oath.
Yeah, and this is being driven by the Curzon memories or the Curzon side of Dax's background. So I find it funny that Sisko is sort of either unaware or not understanding of it. I guess because it's so out of character, but that makes it even worse.
Well, but it was 80 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, true.
Sisko didn't know him then.
Yeah.
And we established back in that episode, Dax, that there were many things that Curzon did that Sisko had no idea about.
Right. Okay, that's true. Okay. I will accept that as a very valid point.
Okay.
When Dax got upset and said Kira shouldn't have told you, I thought that was Kira very much demonstrating both concern for her friend and colleague, but also she has a duty to the station and Sisko, because Sisko's Dax's commanding officer.
Yeah. Well, Sisko did say, she's my first officer.
Yeah.
Like, that's what's expected of her.
Right. I mean, telling Kira that, you couldn't expect anything but. Maybe she deliberately did it. That she told Kira because she knew it would get back to Sisko and she wouldn't have to tell Sisko directly.
I don't think so. Dax is much more complicated than that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think she really was asking Kira for specific advice. I don't think she expected her to tell Sisko. Although, I don't think she was really shocked that she told him.
Yeah.
In this situation, if you're on a team, you would, or at least I guess you should, if you're looking out for the health and well-being of your teammates, you probably should report something like this up. I think there are situations where you don't do that to be a good team member. But in this case, I think she was worried about whether or not Dax's life was actually in danger.
Oh, that's true.
Not just her morals.
Yeah. That's a good point.
After the ad break, we are on an old Klingon warbird heading to the albino compound. Kang is showing them the layout and talking about the defenses. Dax feels like this info must be out of date or false to give attackers a false sense of security. Kang seems exasperated by all of this. He doesn't want a complex plan. He doesn't want to sneak in. He wants to boldly come in the front door and overwhelm them to glorious victory. Or glorious death, Koloth says. Then Kor says, it is a good day to die. And Dax repeats it.
Straight power play.
Oh my God.
This plan is so bad, it could be a Deep Space Nine plan.
Yes.
Straight from the Deep Space Nine planning archives.
But in their defense, they do come up with a better plan.
Now in this scene, you've got to have noticed just how good Koloth's outfit was.
He's like the distinguished older gentleman.
Oh, yeah.
In his tweed suit and hat.
Right. Yeah, that's Koloth. It's a great cosplay outfit. I mean, it's beautifully done.
Yes. Actually, these three would be a good cosplay with three people.
I'm almost the right age for it now.
Well, not quite. Koloth and Kor head off to sharpen their batleths, leaving Kang and Dax. Dax is surprised he's just inviting death with his plan. She says, this isn't a plan for battle. It's a plan for suicide. And then she realizes that's why he didn't want her to come, because he knows this is a suicide mission.
The big reveal. Dax says, you knew you were coming to die.
He says when he received the amulet, he went to check on the validity of the info, and the albino sent an invitation for one last glorious battle. He said he's tired of being pursued. He offered to send 40 men after them so they could die an honorable battle. He says if we can't reach the albino, at least we will die an honorable death trying to. Dax says you Klingons embrace death too easily.
Well, yeah.
He says he knows the defenses and there's just no chance of victory. But Dax asks if they'd have a better chance without phasers. She says she can modulate the disruptors on the ship to bombard the compound with tetrion particles, and every directed energy weapon would be neutralized. He asks if she's certain this is possible, and she says if Curzon were here, you'd be out of luck. But Jadzia is a science officer.
Oh, yeah.
Without phasers, they'd be more evenly matched in hand-to-hand combat, which improves their chances. Suddenly, Kang has renewed vigor. Perhaps it is a good day to live, he says. And we go to another ad break.
It is fortunate that they have Dax along. I mean, she has a lot of smarts and knows how to disable the phasers. So that's a plus for everybody.
It's an interesting trick, though. It seems like we should be using that more frequently.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd think if you could do that, you'd be doing that all the time.
Exactly. Yes.
Did you also notice? I just love Kang's chair in this scene.
His chair?
Yeah. The chair he's sitting in when she's talking to Dax. Yeah. He has like little Klingon Empire symbols above each shoulder. Like on the...
Like little stickers?
Yeah. Like on the head of the chair. I'm like, that's a really cool chair. Clearly, it's his power gaming chair.
Right. It's his gaming chair for sure. Now we are down on the planet at the Albino's Fortress, where we see armed guards wandering around. Jadzia detects some kind of mine at the entrance, so the Albino obviously lied about their deal of a fair fight.
This is clearly somebody who's dishonorable, so he's going to lie. I would think the Klingons would understand that.
She says this gives them an advantage because he's expecting them to come through the front door.
Straight power play.
And then Kang starts doubting the whole thing and wonders if the Albino is even inside. Koloth climbs to his feet and says, he's going to ask somebody, and he stomps off, like somebody going to get directions at a gas station. That was like, I don't know why, but that was so funny.
Yes.
Kang says they need to shut down the sensor array by hitting the nearby power station. Kor says he'll create a diversion at the same time in the armory, but Jadzia points out whoever creates the diversion will have to run across a field. And she says, with all due respect, none of you are as quick as you once were, so I'll volunteer for that job.
They should be very happy to have Dax there. She does seem to have much more of an ability to plan and actually carry out the plan.
Yeah, I think they would have been doomed with Curzon.
Yeah.
Especially if Curzon was so old, as old as they are.
Yes.
Koloth then returns, saying he encountered a helpful lookout who confirmed the Albino is inside. The moment we attack, he's going to move to a secure command post. None of that seemed to happen, so I don't know, that detail was uninteresting. They all head off on their missions, with the old dudes attacking guards on the way to the power station.
I like how before they set off, Kang said, "May Kalis guide us on this day of vengeance."
Yes, he did.
Oh, that's very Klingon.
And they all put their hands in the middle, like, go team.
Go team, Klingon.
Jadzia sets off the explosion very quickly in the armory, and we get our first view of the Albino as he jumps to his feet at the sound of the explosion. He looks like a Klingon, generally, just very white with all white hair.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't Vok.
No, it definitely wasn't. Then we see guards trying to shoot at Jadzia, but none of their phasers work, of course, so she seems to escape the explosion unscathed. The Albino sends guards to make sure the power station is secure, just as the power goes out, so not so secure. We get more scenes of the old guys killing guards. That is a little bit painful. They meet up with Jadzia and they blast their way through the front door just as the Albino is shouting about not wanting Klingon filth in his house. What happened to the mine at this point? Because isn't this not the front door?
Yes.
Yeah, I think we forgot about the mine. Or maybe we went around it.
Maybe it was just the front door of the compound.
Oh, maybe.
I like the way he grabs one of his minions and hides behind him.
Yeah, he does. He stands right behind him. Kang shouts, "Look upon your executioners, killer of children."
Also very Klingon.
Very Klingon. And now it's all hand-to-hand combat as the Albino appears to just stand there right behind his guard.
Yeah.
Koloth is the first to get stabbed and go down. Each battle is a little slow and not very dramatic, but lots of big clanging noises.
Well, it shows that even old Klingons are a formidable enemy with a bat'leth.
Yes.
But it's also strange that it's surprisingly bloodless for using edged weapons.
Yeah.
To quote Quark from earlier, so much blood. There doesn't seem to be a lot in these scenes.
Yeah, and there's not much blood. I think this might be why I could get into those sort of 90s action adventure type things, because I can't stand the super bloody, gory kind of things.
Oh.
But I still want the drama like this.
Oh, I'd love to see a modern remake of this kind of scene. If we did that today, I'm pretty sure you'd see arms flying everywhere.
Blood everywhere. Oh, it'd be gross.
Klingons covered in blood. It would be glorious.
Well, it would depend on if it was on streaming or if it was actually on, you know, on the networks.
Oh, I think I would enjoy the streaming version, yes.
Or maybe Disney.
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, even Star Wars, lots of dramatic things happen, you know, but there's not a lot of gore and blood.
Yeah.
Before Koloth dies, Kor tells him he will sing the song of his courage and the story will never die. That seems to make him happy. It was very cute.
Oh, yeah.
Meanwhile, Kang gets to the last guard and makes his way to the albino. As they fight, the end of Kang's batleth gets chopped off, distracting him just long enough so that he gets stabbed in the stomach. He goes down, and the albino stands over him saying, "No vengeance today, Kang." But Jadzia surprises him, knocking the weapon from his hand. He says she's too young and lovely to have such a deadly weapon. He stands right on top of her blade and taunts her to stab him when she says that she's Curzon. But it doesn't matter because Kang stabs him from behind and kills him. Kang thanks her for saving the death blow for him. He says, "You've honored me one last time." Before he dies, he says, "Today is a good day to die." And Jadzia says, "It's never a good day to lose a friend." Meanwhile, Kor is stumbling around. He's injured, but alive.
He got stabbed as well.
He starts singing some Klingon song as he walks amongst the bodies.
That was an impressive fall down the stairs after Kang stabbed the albino in the back.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was quite a scene of Kor, who'd been stabbed by one of the guards, holding his side, staggering around all the bodies.
Singing. Yeah.
So I assume that song is either a song of victory, mm-hmm. a song after a successful vengeance, because you know they'll have a song for a successful vengeance, or a song for losing a friend in battle. I think Klingons would have songs for all these situations.
I'm sure it was some kind of a victory song.
Yeah.
Although, what did they really win? They're all dead except the one of them.
Well, Kang and Koloth, their place in Stovakor is guaranteed. They fell in battle. Even better for Kang if he actually managed to complete his oath of vengeance upon his greatest enemy.
Yep.
He'll get premier seating on the boat to Stovakor.
Sure, sure. Back on the station, Jadzia enters ops. Sisko just looks at her, then heads into his office. She sits down at her station, glancing in Kira's direction. There are no facial expressions or words in this scene, and it just ends. The end.
No one actually asked her what happened. How did your vengeance and slaughter go this weekend, Dax? Was it fun?
Yeah, are you supposed to think that they know what happened or that they're waiting for her to tell them or they just don't want to know?
I think they don't want to know. I think it comes down to...
I'm sure Kira will ask, but I bet Sisko won't.
Yeah. I mean, he might not want to know that about his friend. Kira would be the one closest to having an actual understanding of this.
Right.
We've seen how Sisko in the past was really surprised with the idea of capital punishment. So I would expect Sisko would be the hardest one to reconcile that with his friend and his subordinate.
Well, and the thing that we never talk about is, she didn't make the death blow or whatever at the end of the albino, but she must have killed some of those guards. Those are people too.
That's true.
But we just kind of gloss over that. Like, oh no, they're guards, so they're not real.
Yeah. Paid guards, they're just cannon fodder.
Yes, very Stormtrooper-esque.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, they were just non-player characters that you have to get through before the final boss level.
Right.
It was a good fight scene, though. I did enjoy that.
It was pretty good. Well, this is the end of the episode. Do you have any over-analysis?
Yes, I do. And the first point, which is quite close to the end there, is do you think Dax was allowing Kang to get the death blow? Or was she hesitant to actually kill the guy? Because from where she was standing, she would be able to see Kang basically getting to his knees or being able to stand up and get his knife.
Right.
And I thought they made it ambiguous enough that you could take it either way. I'm not sure. I think she might have deliberately left it for Kang to do that. I think if she'd got to that point, I think she would prepare to kill the guy, but she saw Kang was behind him and literally let him take the killing blow.
I don't think so. I think she hesitated because at that moment she was Jadzia, not Curzon.
Ah.
I actually felt like that was the culmination of that whole episode where she was sort of clinging to that blood oath and couldn't really explain her attachment to that oath. And then when she got there, it's almost like that thing where once you get to something and it's real and in front of you, it's like, oh, crap, I had the completely wrong view of this.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't do this. So I didn't think so. I actually thought it was part of her character development that when she got there, she realized she couldn't do it.
Okay. That's a good take.
Any other overanalysis?
This is going back to, I agree with you on the inconsistency with the Trill here.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard about and we've seen that when they change hosts, the relationships, their feelings, even their behavior change.
Right.
And we saw that with Sisko. With her view of the relationship between Curzon and Sisko and now Jadzia and Sisko. And then with these Klingons, it's like, boom, we've been best of friends, close as ever. I was sort of like, wait a minute, this is kind of odd, of this relationship seemed to be just as strong and completely jumped from host to host. So I guess it falls under one of those things of, like you point out in the past, of how this works is how it makes the writing work.
Right.
How do relationships work between Trill changing hosts?
Yeah.
Well, in whatever way is needed to make the story advance.
How does it fit into my story today?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I also think it's interesting that the idea that there could be events in the past that were so traumatic that they have an impact on the subsequent host.
Right.
And I like that as an idea. I think it worked pretty well here because it did seem very genuine, the friendship between these Klingons and how Jadzia sort of approached them and dealt with them. I like that.
It makes sense that it might be a little bit inconsistent with how it works, because even if you think about humans, two humans could experience a very similar traumatic event, but their reactions to it could be completely opposite.
Right.
I mean, one could take it as a moment of growth and build on it, and another one could just sort of go down a dark hole, not able to cope with it. I mean, a lot of that would be because in that particular situation, no matter how similar the events were, their lives would not have been exactly the same leading up to it. Their brain chemistry would be different. I mean, there are all these things that are going to be different.
Right.
And so it would make sense that they couldn't predict exactly how you would react to something from a previous life. You could also say this is why they were so careful about who they picked for the hosts. Because of this kind of thing, they were going to have to face this turmoil in many situations, and they would have to be sort of stable enough or have enough of a strong foundation that they would be able to cope with it when those things came up.
Oh, right.
And Dax said that thing a couple episodes ago about it overwhelming hosts if they weren't ready for it. And this is probably what she meant.
Oh, like the ingrained memories would just flood you.
Right, right.
That's a good way of looking at it. Yeah. Because that's always something I wonder about the Trill, of how much of those, that background would negatively impact you. So I guess that ties in with your idea of you need to have a strong personality to start with to be able to cope with that kind of thing.
Right.
Okay.
The idea of the Trill is maybe the most interesting type of character in Star Trek.
Yeah.
There's so much you could do with that.
Oh, yeah. And as we've kind of seen with Discovery.
With the Trill.
Yeah.
You know, we haven't seen enough of that yet.
But we've seen some ideas.
Yes, for sure.
No spoilers.
Any other overanalysis?
Okay, perhaps this is the final one. And I'm going to give my interpretation of the Klingon phrase, perhaps today is a good day to die. And I look at this as perhaps this is a translation issue for the Universal Translator into English. I'm wondering if it's more of it's used as a counter to fear, because the worst thing I think than death for Klingons is to be seen as a coward or as to being seen frightened of things.
Right.
So this, if you like, it doesn't necessarily mean perhaps today is a good day to die. It means perhaps today is a good day to live. It sort of, if you like, means the opposite of it's a way of overcoming fear of you're sort of saying to yourself, or you're convincing yourself that I'm not frightened of these things.
But it's also, I'm not frightened of death.
Yeah.
Like when Worf uses it in First Contact, that's what it is.
Oh, yeah.
Right? He's just like, okay, I'm willing to sacrifice myself at this point for the greater good.
To achieve victory.
To me, that's what it meant when he said, today is a good day to die.
Yeah.
But also, yeah, it means what the story writer needs it to mean. It's funny, but you could use that pretty much in any situation in fiction.
Yeah. It means what we need it to mean.
Exactly.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
That wraps it up, I think.
So I looked up who this albino guy is.
Uh-huh.
And this was his only appearance in all of the Star Trek shows.
Oh.
But there was a novel that outlined the story of the albino and the Blood Oath.
Oh.
And it involves Sulu. Now I want to read it.
Oh.
It sounds very interesting.
Was that published after the episode or before?
After, I believe. Ah. But in that book, you learn that the albino is actually a Klingon cast out for being different, which is like Voke, actually, in Discovery. And the virus that killed the children was given to the fathers of the children and then passed down to them, which is interesting.
Oh.
It sounds like a very interesting story now that I've seen this episode.
Wow, he really did deserve his end.
Yeah. Well, if we go to women in the future, I don't know. I didn't write down any notes about what to say about women in the future. One thing I will say is this is the best Jadzia episode we've had.
Without question.
She was pretty consistent throughout it, which I appreciated.
Yep.
And I think she was able to show some acting chops. And I kind of liked just what they did with her being this sort of young version of their old friend. And yet she could still connect with that old friend thing.
Yes.
But yet she had new ideas and she had fresh ways of looking at things. And she wasn't like, we're going in here to die. We're going in here to win. Right. She looked at it as like a mission.
Yeah.
So I thought that was actually good. And so I really appreciated the fact that this was the best of the Dax episodes. The only thing I actually wrote in here is I was wondering about the strong pull to that blood oath and the godson. And we've kind of talked about that a little bit, so I don't want to repeat it. But I'm wondering too, if there was a bit of that emotion that she was feeling because of a child that was involved. And she made that point when she talks about the children who were killed of saying they were innocent.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that's the thing that really pulled her back to that oath more than it was just that it was this oath of vengeance that Curzon took.
Oh, that it was an injustice that needed to be righted.
Right.
Okay.
And then I appreciated, too, the stronger relationship between Kira and Jadzia. That's something that a couple episodes ago I was complaining about. I didn't think it was right.
Yeah.
I didn't think it made sense. So I thought it was good here. So overall, that was positive.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the Klingons just accepted her as another warrior.
Yeah, I actually quite liked that. It took a little bit of convincing, except for Kor. Kor was like right in with it right away, but he was also the jovial drunk guy who was ready for anything and just enjoying himself.
Right.
The other two were a little bit more skeptical, although I think Kang was relatively accepting. He just didn't want to get her killed.
Oh, yes.
Which is why he pushed back.
Yeah, because, well, he didn't reveal his ulterior motive to this whole thing.
Right, not until they were in the Warbird.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's go to rating. Thumbs up, thumbs down, or neutral. What is your rating?
Absolute thumbs up. Great episode on so many levels.
Overall, I thought this episode was very cheesy.
Oh.
Like some of those hand-to-hand battles, and I don't know, some of it was just very cheeseball. But Kang was the coolest of Klingons, serious and full of honor,
yep.
Appreciated all of that. And I watched it twice. I watched it once when I was walking on the elliptical, so I couldn't take notes. And then when I watched it the second time, I actually appreciated it quite a bit more.
Yeah.
So I thought this was cheesy but good, and I'll give it a thumbs up.
Yay.
And I want to read that book. I have no evidence that that's a well-written book. I just like the idea of that story and learning a bit more about it.
So this episode has resulted in homework.
Sure. We'll have to do a book review then. But probably not.
As if we don't have enough to do already.
Editing the podcast is a job in itself.
Indeed.
Well, so the next episode that we have coming up is the Maquis.
Yes.
And when this, it's a two-parter. And when these episodes aired, there was a episode in front of it that was airing at the same time from Star Trek The Next Generation, which was still on. So we're actually going to go and watch that before we watch the Maquis episodes.
And everything going to plan, we will also have a podcast guest to discuss the two Maquis episodes, a friend and talented artist from my book club.
Comic-Con book club.
Yes.
Yes, I think it's a very dangerous thing to say in 2020 if things go to plan. I don't think a single thing in 2020 has gone to anybody's plan.
Yeah, okay, that's a very good point.
But we are hoping, yes, that that's what will happen.
Yes.
And we'll have our first guest, so that should be good. And also, I think I would say we're starting to approach the end of the season, which is shocking. But if you've got some feedback you want to send us for this season or any of the episodes or the season in general, please send it to us at rebingeit@gmail.com.
And we will include it in our end of season finale wrap up.
Correct. You could also give us a 5-star review on your platform of choice. We like those too.
We'll take 4.5 stars.
No, only 5. No, actually, we just like feedback. We're very happy when we hear that people are enjoying the podcast, and we are also happy to take feedback. But clearly, when I ask for positive feedback, you know, come on, it's 2020. I just want to hear good things. And also, this is just a thing that we're doing for fun.
Yes. So. And I hope everybody is having fun listening to it.
All right. That is it for season 2, episode 19. Come back next week for episode 20, unless we get really ambitious and decide to do an interim podcast about the next gen episode. We'll see.
Yes.
In the meantime, if you'd like to do your own overanalysis of this or any episode, or if you just want to say something nice, please email us at rebingeit@gmail.com or tweet us at rebingeit. Also, check us out on talkthroughmedia.com. You can leave feedback for us there and listen to all of our other awesome podcasts.
Thanks for joining us on the Rebinge Deep Space Nine podcast.
That's it for me.
And that's it from me.
Can't believe we didn't have a single helicopter or airplane that entire recording.